It's time for Free Thought Radio, a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, www.ffrf.org, with your hosts, FFRF co-presidents Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor, with irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Happy heathens, godless infidels, hellbound atheists, and all you anti-disestablishmentarians, too. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, an hour free from religion, brought to you by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're streaming live and podcasting.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Free Thought Radio is a non-faith-based initiative. The program is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're a national organization of atheists and agnostics based in Madison, Wisconsin. Since 1978, we have been a national group working to keep state and church separate, working to make government secular. To keep government secular, yes, in this country. And around the world to make it secular in some other countries that need it. And we also exist to educate the public about the views of non-theists, the huge minority of Americans, fastest growing minority of Americans by religious identification, who are free from religion.
Yes, we'd like to put a face, or at least a couple of voices, to free thought, to humanize freethinkers, to tell you that we're your friends and neighbors, and we've done a lot of good in the world, we think, and have a lot of good ideas. But I'd like to start the show with a joke, and I have a hankering to hear one of my favorite jokes. It's actually one of the rare jokes that my mother discovered, and Dan, can you tell it? It's sort of a subtle free thought joke.
A subtle afterlife joke, I guess. There was this woman in Wisconsin who was getting older, and she was preparing her affairs, and so she bought a burial plot in a beautiful cemetery in Wisconsin, and she had everything arranged, but then a few years later, she went down to visit her children in Arizona, and she liked it there. So she moved to Arizona, and she said, oh, this is really pretty. It's totally different, but it's really pretty. And about 5-10 years later, she said, I think I'd like to buy a burial plot here in Arizona. So she did, and a really, really nice one. And so her son came up to her and said, Mom, You have two burial plots now. You have one in Wisconsin and you have one in Arizona. And I know this is a sensitive topic, but you know, when you actually do die someday, which one would you like us to choose? And she thought a minute and she said, well, I don't know. Surprise me.
Okay, after a little news, we'll be talking with Nobel laureate and atheist Paul D. Boyer. He won a Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1997, and he's a lifetime member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Among other things, we'll be asking Professor Boyer why the vast majority of elite scientists in the United States are not religious. And later in the show, we'll also talk about the irreligiosity of that highly elite scientist, Albert Einstein.
And then one of the biggest myths about atheists and other freethinkers is that we are immoral, that we have no moral compass without a God. We'll be debunking that slander later in the show, and we'll play a song that also addresses that myth. So stay tuned to the program.
And now for some nice news.
The news of the week of special interest to non-believers is that United States Representative Pete Stark, who's a Democrat from Fremont, California, he acknowledged this week that he does not believe in a supreme being. Representative Stark had already identified himself as a Unitarian, as have some other members of Congress. Unitarians, by the way, are a creedless denomination. Some of them are believers, some are in between, and many of them are not believers.
And so the importance of this announcement is that Representative Stark is now the highest ranking non-theist that is known in politics in the United States of
America.
Exactly.
There have been some school board presidents and some mayors and...
Well, there have been lots of people, but they haven't been public.
Yeah, but to actually come out publicly, a member of Congress. And there are a number of members of Congress who are non-religious, but Representative Stark is the first to explicitly identify himself as not having a belief in a supreme being. He didn't exactly get up and announce it as much as he simply filled out a questionnaire from the Secular Coalition of America. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is a member, organizational member of the Secular Coalition for America, and the SCA sent out this questionnaire to a lot of people, and he simply filled out the questionnaire marking, no, I do not believe in a supreme being. But then this Monday, he issued a simple statement admitting that he had filled out that survey and in saying, quote, like our nation's founders, I strongly support the separation of church and state. I look forward to working with the Secular Coalition to stop the promotion of narrow religious beliefs in science, marriage contracts, the military, and the provision of social services.
Representative Stark is 75 years old, and he's an 18-term member of Congress. He chairs the Health Subcommittee of the House Ways and Means Committee, and he was a co-sponsor of a request to get an audit or a report by the Government Accountability Office that came out last summer on the faith-based initiative. He did that with George Miller. So, an interesting thing happened. Dan and I were in Washington, D.C. a couple of weeks ago to attend the oral arguments, you know, on the Supreme Court case we have against the faith-based initiative. So we had a free day, and we dropped in on several members of Congress, or at least their aides, and we definitely had wanted to go down to Pete Stark's office and thank them for their role in this GAO report on the faith-based initiative, and to thank him for voting on separation of church and state. He's been one of the rare members of Congress who has always voted correctly on these issues. For example, when Mike Newdow won that big case in the Ninth Circuit saying that Under God had to come out of the Pledge of Allegiance, and most members of Congress trotted out on the steps and screamed out a religious Pledge of Allegiance, Pete Stark was one of the rare who voted no, who said on the resolution condemning the judges who wrote that decision, which was a major separation of powers attack. And he's always been firm on this.
And we went to his office before we knew this announcement that he had picked the not believing in a supreme being. And his is one of the offices that actually welcomed us atheists and nonbelievers. A number of members of Congress seem really pleased to talk with people who represent the non-religious part of our country. They're supposed to represent, and we are part of the constituency.
There was a story in the San Francisco Chronicle this week about Representative Stark that pointed out that Stark isn't California's first politician to say he's an unbeliever. California Governor Culbert Olson was a Democrat who served from 1939 to 1943. He was raised a Mormon, but he became an atheist, and he publicly identified himself that way. And in fact, we have something in our files that he's written on this subject. It does take real courage for a politician to be honest on this issue. Last month, USA Today and Gallup poll found that fewer than half of the Americans surveyed said they would vote for an atheist candidate for president even if he or she were well qualified. 95% would vote for a similarly qualified Catholic, 92% for a Jewish candidate, 72% for a Mormon, only 45% said they would consider voting for an atheist presidential candidate.
Of course, that number is up. It used to be 20, 30 years ago, it used to be like 20%. So that number is improving.
Democrat political strategist Dan Newman was quoted in the press saying that this poll shows that anti-atheism remains the last remaining prejudice that a majority of Americans don't mind fessing up to, at least to a pollster. The trend, unfortunately, is for politicians to wear religion on their sleeves. Another pollster, Ben Tulchin, points out that the West Coast is less religious than other parts of the country and that, in fact, California is one of the most non-religious states in the country. So we certainly hope that Representative Stark's honesty will not hurt him with his loyal voters there.
Well, it doesn't look like it is. I just read a story out of Oroville, California. He gave an interview to a reporter there about his coming out as a non-theist. And Representative Stark said, so far, all of the responses and emails he's got are positive. And the story even quoted a local minister in town who says, I don't see why his religious views should affect my vote for him because of the good work he's doing, you know, in the district.
And listeners to this program could certainly email Representative Stark, go to his, you know, to the website and find his office and thank him. Yeah, for coming out as an atheist or a non-religious person.
And in that story, Stark was quoted saying, I don't see why my faith or lack of faith would have anything to do with the Medicare issue, for example, except perhaps if somebody is pushing faith healing. I'm Dan Barker. I'm here with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and Free Thought Radio will be right back. We're going to talk with another well-known Californian who is an atheist, Nobel laureate, Paul D. Boyer. So stay tuned.
Life is short, short, brother. Ain't it the truth? And there is no other. Ain't it the truth? You got to rock that rainbow while you still got your youth. Ain't it the solid truth?
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Dan Barker, here with my co-host, Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Today we have on the phone with us from California, Paul D. Boyer, a life member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, who won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1997. He was born in Provo, Utah in 1918. Professor Boyer received his undergrad degree from Brigham Young University and did graduate studies here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where he earned his PhD in 1943. He was named director of Molecular Biology Institute at UCLA in 1965.
So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Professor Boyer.
Thank you. I'm delighted to join you.
So you were born in 1918. That's before women could even vote, isn't it? Wow.
That was some time ago.
So are you 88 years old then? Is that right?
Yes.
So you know what that means? That means you finally made it to the top of the piano. There's 88 keys on a piano.
I gave up playing the piano a while ago.
Yeah.
A nice thought. Thank you.
Well, now you left the Mormon church and then you became an atheist. And you've written that your concerns were not so much Mormonism, but a more basic rejection of all religion as you became more and more interested in science. Is that basically what happened to you?
Yeah, I'd say that's surely correct. As you start looking for how our universe is made and our world is made, it was the information that came from rational inquiry from science that influenced me more than a particular distaste for Mormonism or a particular religion.
So how long have you considered yourself to be an atheist, Professor Boyer?
Well, I'd say an agnostic through to about the age of 25 or so, and then became sufficiently clear that I slipped over from the agnostic to the atheist.
And when you were an atheist and agnostic, when you first realized you were an atheist, did you know anybody else who was an atheist, or did you feel like you were the only one?
Oh, no, I never felt alone in this because my fellow scientists at that time, really, we didn't spend much time thinking about it. We were so concerned with our science. But those that I did know, and including my wife, I was not alone as an atheist.
And you've pointed out that studies, recent studies, have shown that about 60% of scientists are atheists. That's kind of a disappointing figure to you, I think. But that when you look at elite scientists, those who are members of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, you see something different happening.
This, to me, is a striking thing, that as you look at the level of accomplishment and particular to the fields, those that have accomplishment in the biological sciences are the least likely to retain a belief in the supernatural.
So it's something like only 10% of elite scientists believe in a god, is that right?
Less. Of the members of the National Academy of Science, it's about 10%. But when you get into the biologists, I don't have exact figures, but I would suspect it's less than 2 or 3%.
Wow. And what about chemists like yourself?
I am more of a biologist than a chemist.
Your colleagues are, you would be a molecular biologist, right?
Yes, a biochemist, the study of living things.
Wow.
And so it's when you study the living things, you see the plan of evolution, you see just the marvel of what has been possible.
You have said that scientific accomplishments in the last 60 years or so really give compelling evidence against beliefs both in a God and in the hereafter.
Yes, I'd say the evidence is compelling is when you look for any of the places we have information that has been in this astounding accumulation, like in astrophysics, as well as in the living cell. That information has come from rational inquiry, and I'd say that for religion to hold up to that, it would have to be able to be a source of some of that information. And there isn't a single bit of information about how living things work or how the cosmos works that came from religion.
Now, you've heard some of these intelligent design people claim that the cell shows evidence of irreducible complexity, which shows the fingerprints of a designer. What do you say about that?
Well, I'd say that this is not the person that's making that conclusion is not intelligent. Now, that is to say that you need to have a capacity to admit there are things we can't answer. We can't answer all kinds of questions.
Not yet.
Yet our way towards that is through rational inquiry. And so,
not just giving up and making up an answer, right?
The fact you want to say that an eye is so complex it couldn't have been designed, yet you can go back through the evolutionary steps in response to light and find down in lower animals and others the responsive organisms that would do it. It's just a tribute to the marvelous process that makes such things as possible.
Now, can you explain briefly what you got the Nobel Prize for in chemistry? Is that something that we could understand?
Yes, I think so. Everybody has to breathe oxygen to get energy.
Yeah.
And you probably know that you burn your foodstuffs inside the body and exhale carbon dioxide. In that process, the energy is captured to make a compound that one could be called the currency of the cell. That is, that energy is compound to makes a compound called adenosine triphosphate, or ATP. And we worked at the enzyme that makes this ATP. Found that the energy that was captured makes an electrochemical gradient across the membrane, and that then drives this unusual little rotational machine that makes the ATP molecule. Now, an active person will make nearly a body weight of ATP a day and use it for brain, muscle, all the bodily functions. So the work was for the enzymology of how ATP is made.
And what year did you publish that? That was back in the 80s?
Well, we started this, the work that led to it back in the 1970s.
Wow.
And published it through the 80s.
And then you got the Nobel in 1997. We shared it.
1997.
Right?
Yes. And you shared it with three others?
Actually, yes, the two. A professor at Cambridge University, using the techniques of called X-ray crystallography, solved the structure of the enzyme, the three-dimensional structure, and its three-dimensional structure fit right into the concepts we had suggested for how the enzyme acts. So Walker and I shared a portion of the prize that was from how ATP was made.
So the origin of that enzyme, though, wouldn't some creationists say that that shows evidence of design? Can you explain where that came from?
There is no way that I can stop a creationist from saying any any weird thing he wants to say.
Now, that must have been pretty exciting to get your Nobel Prize. Did you go to Sweden to pick it up?
That, of course, was a pleasure, yes. And not only did I, but my family and children and grandchildren. My grandchildren learned a little bit of what the old man had been doing.
Now,
it was a very nice occasion, no question.
Well, it must have been terribly exciting to make that kind of contribution. Now, I want to ask a little bit about your personal life. We have met you, and you're a lovely person.
In San Diego, we met. That's right.
And I think that people, the public, should know, how does an atheist go about leading a nice, ethical, moral life?
I don't see. There is so much in secular humanism that can be shown. Obviously, they must lead a moral life because my wife is one of the most thoughtful, kindest persons I know in the world, and she is a confirmed atheist. So obviously, it doesn't mean that the fact that you don't believe in some type of a God that governs your plans. You know what humans do for each other and what we've done in the past. And it readily comes that this group interaction and the kindness and hope for others are part of what I would call a rational existence.
So when you were a young man and you were a member of the Mormon Church, did you actually believe in the gold tablets and in the angel Moroni, or in your heart of hearts, or were you just going along, or was your deconversion difficult or easy?
Actually, I had wondered about this on through, but it wasn't a major part of my life. I never was steeped in Mormonism although I've been in the community, I went to church. I used to pray because my mother wanted me to, but never with any conviction.
Did you wear the underwear, the special Mormon underwear?
No.
No?
You were not temple ordained.
No. I had before getting involved in temple actions or other more religious practices, I had already become a non-believer.
Well, see, that's where you went wrong. If you had worn that underwear, it would have shielded you from the evils of atheism, see?
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be a remarkable thing. Now, if I really wondered about that, I would think of an experimental test that we could do.
Well, then you would win another Nobel Prize if that were true, isn't it?
Excuse me, pardon me, I have a little cold.
Oh. Well, we are very honored that you joined us today from California. We thank you so much for speaking out as one of those elite scientists for free thought.
I want to tell you how pleased I was to find a Freedom from Religion Foundation that were worried about such issues as In God We Trust, On Our Money, etc.
And your speech that you gave us in San Diego is online on our newspaper, Free Thought Today. You gave a wonderful talk. And listeners to the show can go to FFRF.org and read the wonderful speech you gave us two or three years ago.
Well, thank you. I'm pleased if I can help.
And please say hello to Lida for us.
I shall do that.
Thank you.
Happy as can be, I'm your neighborhood atheist. Friendly as can be, hi, I'm your neighborhood atheist. any horns. If you care to inspect me, but don't expect me to think just like you. I know wrong from right, and my life has meaning. Don't worry, I won't bite. I'm as nice as you. All of us are made of the stuff of the stars. Atheists are human beings, we didn't come from Mars. Atheists are people too. You must have been a bad boy.
Free Thought Radio is back. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And now for Ask an Atheist. One of the questions we at the Freedom From Religion Foundation and many atheists and agnostics get asked is, how can an atheist be moral?
Now, in the last couple of weeks, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has had a lot of publicity, and it's generated overwhelmingly positive inquiries. I mean, we're talking thousands of positive responses, signing up 900 new members in a two-week period. But we got quite a barrage of crank mail through all of this, mostly emails.
From moral believers?
And we get a lot of them, but when you're in the media, you get more. If you have negative media, you're much more apt to get nasty emails. And we've had generally positive media, but there was so much of it that we got quite a bit. And Dan, why don't you read, I think this is my quote-unquote favorite. It's a real doozy.
Oh, this was an email we got?
Mm-hmm.
I just read about you in the news. I did not know such a group was formed. Well, all I can say is that I do hope you all unplug your head from your ass and wipe the shit out of your eyes so you may be able to see with more clarity. How sad that complete liberal morons like yourself can even make the news, little less have an influence. Do not worry. One day you will be standing tall before the man. And you will have to answer for all that you have done. I have taken the liberty to send out your contact info to every anti-liberal group that I know of, including the KKK. Have a nice day. Signed by somebody named Leslie Duke.
And he actually said he worked for a ballistics company. I think he's found his niche. And we got all kinds of other hate mail. I mean, we're talking hundreds of hate mail. But I selected some sort of representative samplings for Dan to continue to read.
Well, it looks like you're going to print like 30 of them in the next issue of Free Thought
yes,
today.
Yes, and people can see all of them if they want a sample copy or they join.
Okay, well, here's just a few. This one is the subject line says, ha 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 ha. Just wanted to let you know that you guys are a bunch of worthless hippie fags. I hope all of you die.
What a nice email.
from moral people, right? Here's one with the subject, out of my country, a**hole. You people make me sick. Shut up, pack up, and get your sick a**hole out of my country. Now, a**hole. Here's one with the subject, FFRF, idiots, all in capital letters. You could just as easily move to godless Europe and spare the rest of us your idiotic screed.
And I have to say that, you know, every other email said, you know, they moved someplace, moved to, they're still saying the Russia, now they're saying Iran, Iraq. Europe is kind of rare to hear, but
yeah,
it's very common theme.
In my family's Native American, what country are we supposed to move back to? You know, this is our, it's continent belongs to all of us. Here's another one. It's the subject says, go to hell. I hate you godless whack jobs. May you rot in hell. Down here, let's see. This one is called, just FFRF. This one's directed to you, Annie Laurie.
Aren't I lucky?
You sure you want me to read this one?
Yes, I do.
All right. I know that tree-hugging, God-hating mother of yours warped your mind, but that is no excuse for you ignoring In God We Trust and One Nation Under God. It offends me that you are offended by religion. Idea. Go to Iraq and start one of your God, in their case, Muhammad, hating groups and see if that doesn't get you on michaelsavage.com, having those animals saw your head off.
And now may I just interject that I have the sweetest mother in the world at 80 on such a vicious attack.
Okay, the one after that is subject, burn in hell, with how many exclamation points? I can't even count them. If you don't like God or don't believe in him, you are infringing on my rights as a citizen of the U.S.
Now, go figure.
Yeah, so if we don't believe in God, we're infringing on their rights to believe. I guess
a lot of people think that way. It's really sad.
Well, that's like a sign of insecurity, isn't it? I mean, that somebody would believe something different from them. Skipping down, down, down. Okay, here's the one. The subject is, you stink. Nothing good can come out from the mouths of freethinkers, atheists, agnostics, and skeptics. You are so far off from the truth that it smells. You are so uneducated, it stinks.
Now, you know, you do detect a real theme. Atheists should leave the country. We should go to hell. We are going to go to hell because we don't believe in Jesus, and we're immoral. And I joke at the beginning of the show often about, you know, greeting hellbound atheists. But I think you can't underestimate the harm that this continual mantra causes that makes atheism a taboo, because there's this idea that you're not really human or you're not a good human being. Just this month, the University of Michigan published a study that shows that reading a violent scripture verse increases aggressive behavior. The study appears in the March 2007 issue of Psychological Science. It was run by a psychologist named Brad Bushman. And they experimented with students, and they found that when they read them a passage from the Bible and told them it was a holy scripture, they were far more aggressive in conducting this experiment, where they had to subject other students to a very loud noise. And what the psychologist said was, Christian extremists, Jewish reactionaries, and Islamic fundamentalists all can cite scripture that seemed to encourage or at least support aggressiveness against unbelievers. And that's what we see in our hate mail. And that's what a study out of the University of Minnesota showed last year, which was a major study showing that atheists were at the bottom of the totem pole. You've already heard the study that people wouldn't vote for an atheist. They don't even want someone in their family to marry an atheist. They stereotype them as criminals, as prostitutes, as not sharing the common values of America.
Well, we did a show on that, didn't we?
Penny Edgell. Our first show, we actually interviewed
Penny
the
researcher. Edgell, yeah, that's right.
So let's talk about this myth, Dan. I mean, it is a major barrier.
Okay, so the question was, how can an atheist be moral? It might be true that all believers are horribly immoral. It wouldn't make us atheists moral either, the fact that they're all, you know, many of them are so insecure.
But we are showing, you know, that, gee, if Christianity or fervent belief in a God is supposed to make you moral, it doesn't make you write very nice emails.
Yeah, or
at least the ones that we got.
Exactly, and there are a lot of believers, Christians and Jews and Muslims, who are really good people. In spite of the brutality of their Bible and their book. But how can an atheist be moral? We get asked that question a lot. And if you define morality as just being religious, well, then you can't. I mean, you're defined out of morality. Muslims will say the only way to be moral is to submit to Allah. And anyone who does not submit to Allah, a Jew, a Christian, an atheist, we are all infidels, and we can't possibly be moral, because by definition, morality is just following the will of the dictator.
So if you believe in an immoral God, then you could commit gross immorality, as Americans today would consider it, and yet consider yourself to have the highest morals.
You could fly
an
airplane.
So there's a problem with that.
You could fly an airplane into a building and smile because you're going to go to heaven with that. But how do atheists and agnostics determine what is right and wrong? And basically, most of us non-believers would call ourselves humanists of some type, where we put human value and human needs and human suffering, and also by extension the other animals on the planet and the planet itself, we put that above the needs of some imaginary supernatural world. Because if there is such a world, it'll take care of itself. And even Ingersoll said, you know, if there is another world, one world at a time, we have this world to deal with. And the whole question of morality really just boils down to the simple idea of, how do we minimize the amount of harm there is in the world? How do we stop suffering and harm? How do we lessen that? And I think all of us who are progressive realize that our goals as progressive thinkers is to try to make a world that has less threat, less danger, more security, less harm. And harm, being the crux of morality, harm is a natural thing. Harm is something that occurs in the natural world. Harm is not supernatural. It is a natural thing. When you're hungry, when you're bleeding, when you don't have shelter. So the way to be moral is to identify what harm is and then try to find reasonable, rational, and kind ways to lessen that harm in the world.
So in other words, when we have in the Bible that blasphemy is a terrible crime, you should be put to death for it. This is something that is shared in common by the Hebrew Bible, the Christian Bible, and the Quran.
But you've seen
and
that.
We see it actually in force when you look at, for example, the way that Salman Rushdie was treated, some of the fatwas against women like Taslima Nasrin, where you can be put to death because you blaspheme God. You don't believe in a God or you believe in the wrong God. That, in a religious context, could be considered highly immoral. And yet, do most Americans consider that to be true?
Have you seen the bumper sticker? It says, blasphemy is a victimless crime.
Well, we used to have that bumper sticker. I guess we should bring it back.
We should make it again. And then Ayaan Hirsi Ali's story, you know, she made this film criticizing Islam, and she has a death threat with Theo Van Gogh, who was murdered, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when there was a note stabbed onto his chest
in
with
Holland.
Her name on it. Yeah, in Holland.
So we can see that if your morality is exclusively religious and its only morality is obeying a particular book or a particular God, no wonder our world is in such trouble. So we would argue that people who put their value in the natural world, in the consequences of their actions, not looking for a reward in heaven or, you know, to avoid going to hell, could be much more ethical than someone who has this very shallow, authoritarian-driven system of ethics.
It's like what Ingersoll said, in nature there are no rewards or punishment. In nature there are only consequences. And as rational people, we need to identify and we need to do the homework of showing that this action causes harm or this action doesn't cause harm, and how do we evaluate the consequences?
So one of the best ways, I think, to debunk this taboo or this really ridiculous myth about atheists always being immoral and being criminals, etc., is for those of us who are not religious to identify ourselves that way. Because so many people, as the researcher Penny Edgell pointed out, they have met atheists, but they don't know it. People are afraid to come out as atheists or think it's not polite. They don't want to offend someone. Well, now I think it's time that people assert themselves and make known their dissent from religion, because it will educate, and I think it will create much greater tolerance for free thinkers if they know who we are. And we will be right back after this break to talk a little bit about Albert Einstein and his irreligiosity.
We're back with Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And now it's time for this week's Free Thinkers Almanac.
Just passed the anniversary of the birth of Albert Einstein. On March 14, 1879, Albert Einstein was born in Germany. His 1905 paper explaining the photoelectric effect, the basis of electronics, earned him the Nobel Prize in 1921. His first paper on special relativity theory, also published in 1905, changed the world. After the rise of the Nazi Party, Einstein made Princeton his permanent home, becoming a U.S. citizen in 1940. Einstein, a pacifist during World War I, stayed a firm proponent of social justice and responsibility. He chaired the Emergency Committee of Atomic Scientists, which alerted the public to the dangers of atomic warfare.
In a 1930 article for the New York Times, Einstein wrote about his views on religion and his wonder at cosmic mysteries. He wrote, "This insight into the mystery of life, coupled though it be with fear, also has given rise to religion. To know that what is impenetrable to us really exists, manifesting itself as the highest wisdom and the most radiant beauty which our dull faculties can comprehend only in their primitive forms, this knowledge, this feeling, is at the center of true religiousness. In this sense, and in this sense only, I belong in the ranks of devoutly religious men. Confusion over Einstein's beliefs stemmed from such comments as his public statement reported by the United Press in 1929 that, "I believe in Spinoza's God who reveals himself in the orderly harmony in being, not in a God who deals with the facts and actions of men." Einstein's famous quote, "God does not play dice with the universe," which was a metaphor, meaning nature conforms to mathematical law, well, that quote fueled even more confusion. At a symposium, Einstein advised, "In their struggle for the ethical good, teachers of religion must have the stature to give up the doctrine of a personal God, that is, give up that source of fear and hope which in the past placed such vast power in the hands of priests. In their labors, they will have to avail themselves of those forces which are capable of cultivating the good, the true, and the beautiful in humanity itself. This is, to be sure, a more difficult, but an incomparably more worthy task."
That was said in 1941. Einstein, who died in 1955, wrote in his famous New York Times column on religion, "I cannot imagine a God who rewards and punishes the objects of his creation, whose purposes are modeled after our own. A God, in short, who is but a reflection of human frailty. Neither can I believe that the individual survives the death of his body, although feeble souls harbor such thoughts through fear or ridiculous egotism. It is enough for me to contemplate the mystery of conscious life perpetuating itself through all eternity, to reflect upon the marvelous structure of the universe which we dimly perceive, and to try humbly to comprehend even an infinitesimal part of the intelligence manifested in nature."
And now it's time for a poem by Philip Appleman, the poet and Darwin scholar. Philip Appleman is a free-thinking poet. He's an established published poet.
His books include selected poetry. It's available from FFRF.org from the University of Arkansas. He's also edited the Norton Critical Edition on Darwin and Malthus. He's a Darwin scholar.
Now here is Phil Appleman reading one of his poems. It's called Karma Dharma.
Here's a poem that I call just simply, "O Karma Dharma." O Karma Dharma, pudding and pie, give me a break before I die. Grant me wisdom, will, and wit, purity, probity, pluck, and grit. Trustworthy, helpful, friendly, kind, give me great abs and a steel trap mind. And forgive ye gods some humble advice, these little blessings would suffice to beget an earthly paradise. Make the bad people good, and the good people nice. And before our world goes over the brink, teach the believers how to think.
Teach the believers how to think. That was Philip Appleman performing his poem, O Karma Dharma. Now, my co-host, Sam Barker, has had the honor of setting to music several of Philip's poems. They've done collaborations, and we have one to air that has never been broadcast before on Freethought Radio that's called God's Grandeur, Questioning the Morality of God.
God will laugh at the trial of the innocent. When they hunger and thirst, and I send down a famine. When they pray for the sun, and I drown them with rain. And they beg me for reasons, my only reply is, I never apologize, never explain. When the angel of death is a black wind around them, and children are dying in terrible pain, then they burn little candles in churches, but still I never apologize, never explain. when the Christians kill Jews and the Jews kill the Muslims. And Muslims kill writers they think are profane. They clamor for peace or for reasons at least. But I never apologize, never explain. When they wail about murder and torture and rape, when Abel complains about Cain, when they ask me just why I had planned it like this, I never apologize, never explain. Of course, if they're smart, they can figure it out. The reason is perfectly, perfectly plain. It's because I just happen to like it this way. So I never apologize, never explain.
Well, there you have God's Social Etiquette, perfectly explained by Philip Appleman. The words are by Philip Appleman. The music is by Dan Barker. He also performed that on very lovely on the piano. And it's from the CD Friendly Neighborhood Atheist, available from ffrf.org. And I might add that if you would like to read more of Philip Appleman's poetry, we've had requests on how do I find out more about A Simple Explanation for Everything, which was last week's anti-war poem by Philip Appleman that's published in the current March issue of Free Thought Today. So is author Michelle Goldberg's speech on the rise of Christian dominionism in this country, a wonderful speech that she gave for the Freedom from Religion Foundation, excerpts of the briefs, the Friend of the Court briefs in the Freedom from Religion Foundation's lawsuit are featured, our personal anecdotes about going to the Supreme Court. So there's a lot in the March issue. And if you would like a copy, you can go to our website at ffrf.org, or you can call our offices on the weekday, and we'd be very glad to send you a sample copy.
And that's the end of our show today. I'm Dan Barker with co-host Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We want to thank Brian Tarani. Brian's the program director here at Madison's Progressive Talk, the Mic 92.1. And we want to thank Buzz Kemper for his announcing for our show. He's one of the co-owners of Audio for the Arts. You can hear the show at our website, ffrf.org/radio. You can email us at freethoughtradio@ffrf.org, or you can phone the Progressive Hotline, 608-663-7291. If you want to make a comment or ask a question, or ask a question for the Ask an Atheist segment, that's 608-663-7291.
Our thanks to our guest, Paul D. Boyer, and to you for listening to Free Thought Radio on the Mic. That was Lena Horn singing a little bit from Ain't It the Truth, the lyrics by Yip Harburg. You also heard a little bit, that music was originally censored from Cabin in the Sky. You heard a little bit of incidental music by Dan Barker, including something from the song Friendly Neighborhood Atheist.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.